This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The assault on the last patch of land claimed by the Islamic State terror group's caliphate in Syria slowed as it entered its third full day, with U.S.-backed forces announcing a delay due to the presence of additional civilians, many of whom were being used as human shields. Reuters' Saskia O'Donohue reports.
This is the U.S.-backed Syrian force closing in on Islamic State's last territorial bastion near the Iraqi border. The Syrian Democratic Forces, or SDF, say they expect a decisive battle after advancing slowly. The SDF clashed with Islamic State around Baghouz. Capturing the village would cap 4 years of international efforts to roll back the jihadists. Thousands of fighters, followers and civilians had retreated to Baghouz as IS territory shrunk.
That's Reuters' Saskia O'Donohue reporting. The U.S. and South Korea are eliminating the massive military drills they typically conduct each spring, replacing them with smaller exercises. AP correspondent Ben Thomas.
The new training exercises just getting underway run through March 12th. South Korea's military and the U.S.-South Korean Combined Forces Command say they'll focus on strategic, operational, and tactical aspects of general military operations on the Korean Peninsula. President Trump tweets the move will save hundreds of millions of dollars that the U.S. was not reimbursed for, and adds reducing tensions with North Korea at this time is a good thing. Ben Thomas, Washington.
The chief financial officer for China tech giant Huawei is suing the Canadian government, its border security agency, and the national police for what it calls rights violations. Lawyers from Meng Wanzhou have filed the lawsuit claiming misfeasance in public office and false imprisonment. The suit says that Meng, the daughter of Huawei's founder, was detained, searched, and questioned for hours before being told she was under arrest and allowed access to counsel. This is VOA News. U.S. diplomats have visited with a dual U.S.-Saudi national believed to have been tortured during his detention in Riyadh. That's according to National Security Advisor John Bolton. Waleed Fatahi, a Harvard-trained doctor who opened a hospital in Saudi Arabia in 2006, was detained in November 2017 along with other prominent Saudis as part of what the government said was a corruption crackdown after being held at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Riyadh for a week. He was later told, or a friend later said, that he was dragged into a room where he was slapped, blindfolded, stripped to his underwear and bound to a chair. That's where he was shocked with electricity for an hour, allegedly. Top Democratic lawmakers vowed Sunday to step up their investigations of U.S. President Donald Trump and his possible connections to Russia during the 2016 presidential election. On ABC's This Week, House Judiciary Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler says that his panel is launching a broad investigation of the Trump administration.
We've seen abuses of power in an obstruction of justice, threats to the Mueller investigation, threats to witnesses. All of these have to be, all of these have to be investigated and laid out to the American people.
Nadler says that he believes the president has obstructed justice during his 2 years in office. He said that Mr. Trump's former longtime personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, and his lengthy public testimony to Congress last week directly implicated the president in various crimes, both while seeking the office of president and while in the White House. As U.S. Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky has become the fourth Republican promising to oppose President Trump's national emergency declaration to build a wall along the southern U.S. border, it became more likely that the U.S. Senate has enough votes to pass a resolution to block it. If all 47 Senate Democrats vote as expected, the Senate has those votes to pass the resolution with 51 votes. 13 Republicans in the House joined Democrats last week to pass a resolution to block Trump's emergency declaration. If it passes the Senate, it goes to the president, who has promised to veto it.
Señor presidente, ¿regresará hoy a Venezuela? Estamos en el proceso de regreso acá.
Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido left Sunday from the Ecuadorian coastal town of Salinas after announcing his intention to return home to lead new protests against President Nicolas Maduro. Though his route back remains unknown, Guaido, who has spent the past few days touring Latin American nations to gain support, departed Salinas aboard an Ecuadorian Air Force plane. His return opened the possibility that Venezuelan authorities will try to arrest him. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today's Monday, March 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's government reacts to a court ruling declaring the deportation of Cameroon refugees unconstitutional.
Certainly, we'll study the judgment, we'll look at the existing treaties, we'll look at the prevailing circumstances and take a formal decision arising therefrom.
Abubakar Malami is Nigeria's Attorney General. DRC President Tshisekedi promises amnesty for political prisoners, while the Lamuka Coalition of Martin Fayulu says it is taking stock on the way forward. East African community members still say they are working on conservation and maritime safety on Lake Victoria, and border tensions heighten between Rwanda and Uganda.
We have advised Rwandans not to go to Uganda. We cannot guarantee their security in Uganda until we can sort out this problem, absolutely.
Richard Sisdebera is Rwanda's foreign affairs minister, and local organizations in Sierra Leone say they are going to court today to file a complaint against a diamond mining company. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Nigerian government says it is awaiting a formal copy of a judge's ruling declaring as illegal and unconstitutional the abduction and deportation of Cameroon separatists who had applied for refugee status in Nigeria. Among the Cameroonians is Julio Sisiko Ayuk Tabe, president of the self-declared Republic of Ambazonia. Ayuk Tabe and others are on trial before a Cameroon military tribunal. The judge also ordered the Nigerian government to bring the Cameroonians back to Nigeria and give them compensation. Nigeria's Attorney General Abubakar Malami says once the government receives copies of the judgment, it will study it along with existing treaties and make a formal decision, including whether to appeal the ruling or not.
Fundamentally, you know, as you rightly know, they were seeking for an order directing that deportation was null and void and they should be brought back to Nigeria. That was the gist, inclusive of some damages arising from the action of the Nigerian government. And incidentally, by the judgment of the Federal High Court, all the relief sought by them were granted. But then we are yet to receive a formal copy of the judgment for us to study the same and take a decision as to what to do next. So the position of things that there exists indeed a judgment that has been delivered by a court, and then we need to study the same against the background of the antecedents of what happened for the purpose of taking a decision. We are yet to decide on a formal position to take anything from the judgment anyway.
Is there a possibility of an appeal?
Well, no possibility can be ruled out, but then it's a decision that has to be taken after studying the judgment wholeheartedly.
Of course, the judge also said that the federal government should compensate those that have been deported. So I guess nothing will be done until you get a copy of the ruling.
Until we get a copy of the ruling, we look at the decision of the court arising from the orders granted, orders made, arising from the orders for damages, arising from order declaring their deportation as null and void, and then against the background of the order directing that they should be brought back to Nigeria. All these things, we will study the judgment extensively and then agree on a position to take thereafter. So it is only after the receipt of the formal copy of the judgment that will decide on what next line of action to take.
Does Nigeria have an extradition treaty with Cameroon?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, it's something I have to verify against the background of the longstanding relationship and going through the archives. But all these things will be factored into consideration in arriving at a decision as to what to do and what not to do.
Of course, now the leaders of this so-called Ambazonia movement, they are due in court this week, March 7th. A lot could be riding on what your government does.
Well, for whatever it is, I cannot give you categorical precise position until after studying the antecedents, inclusive of the existence of a treaty between Nigeria, otherwise inclusive of the position of the judgment of the court that has been handed down. So it is arising from the wholehearted assessment and consideration of these factors that we will take a position as a government. Before then, it will be premature for me to give you a categorical position. But certainly, we'll study the judgment, we'll look at the existing treaties, we'll look at the prevailing circumstances and take a formal decision arising therefrom.
Mr. Attorney General, thank you very much. So nice to talk with you.
Thank you very much, Mr. James. I'm grateful.
Abubakar Malami is Nigeria's Attorney General. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. A spokesman for the self-proclaimed Republic of Ambazonia is calling on the Cameroon government to immediately and unconditionally release leaders of the self-proclaimed Republic of Ambazonia. The separatist leaders, including their president, Julius Sisiko Ayuk Tabe, are facing terrorist charges before a Cameroon military tribunal after they were abducted by Nigeria and deported to Cameroon. The call for their release comes after a Nigerian federal judge said their abduction and deportation were illegal and unconstitutional. Chris Anu is Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonian Separatist Movement. He says the leaders are patriots and nationalists and should be released unconditionally.
They were abducted to Cameroon illegally, as the court in Nigeria said. They were under legal and constitutional protection in Nigeria. When illegally transferred to Cameroon, they were charged with terrorism. The court in Nigeria has said they were legally in Nigeria. They did not commit any crime. And to prove that, the court has asked the Nigerian government to compensate them. So that now pits the Nigerian government against the Cameroon government that is charging them with terrorism. Our leaders have said they are not French Cameroonians. They are Ambazonians. So we are wondering what case that the French Cameroon government has against them right now.
Of course, the government of Cameroon will say that the leaders that were arrested and your group are involved in an attempt to overthrow the government, the legitimate government, they say, or you are involved in terrorist activities against the government.
Well, that is far from being the truth because, number one, they cannot prove that. Number two, why would our leader, our president, who is a president of another country, be trying to overthrow the president of French Cameroon or the government of French Cameroon? We have no interest with who leads French Cameroon and what goes on with the government of French Cameroon.
At the time of their deportation, the United Nations High Commission for Refugees criticized that. What is it now that you want? The return of your leaders to Nigeria or compensation? Which one comes first?
I think both are very critical because they have suffered unmerited imprisonment for a year incommunicado. I think anyone who thinks that that compensation is not important doesn't know what he or she is thinking. Both are very important. They need to regain their freedom. Of course, you cannot give them money in prison while they are in jail. They have first to regain their freedom and then receive that compensation. And we are hoping that the Cameroon government, with the ruling in Nigeria, will immediately and unconditionally release them so they can then go after what the court in Nigeria has given them as compensation.
The Nigerian court ruling comes at a very crucial time now because I think the next hearing of your leaders before the military tribunal is this Thursday, March 7th. What would you like to see happen?
Well, we have said again and again and adding to the ruling in Nigeria that French Cameroon has no jurisdiction at all to try them even for a second in any court in French Cameroon. We want their unconditional release. They are patriots, they are nationalists. They should be released unconditionally to the people of the Southern Cameroon.
Chris, thank you very much again. Always nice to speak with you.
My pleasure, sir. Thank you.
Chris Anu is Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement of Cameroon. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. Today is Monday, March 4th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. Rwanda has urged its citizens not to travel to Uganda because of safety concerns. This follows a two-year thaw in relations between the two countries. Eugene Uwimana has more from Kigali.
The Rwandan government points to factors that they said contributed to the deterioration of relations with Uganda. One, it accuses Uganda of working closely with groups that Kigali calls terrorists, who Rwanda says are a threat to national security. Secondly, Rwanda says Uganda harasses, captures, and illegally incarcerates ordinary Rwandans who enter Uganda on their own. Rwanda's Foreign Affairs Minister Richard Sezibera says the urgent thing to do is for Rwandans not to travel to Uganda.
We have advised Rwandans not to go to Uganda. we cannot guarantee their security in Uganda. It's been long-standing, and so we are strongly advising those who do not have a necessary business in Uganda not to, until we can sort out this problem, absolutely.
But Uganda has denied the allegations. Instead, Uganda says Rwandans who get incarcerated are Rwanda's government intelligence agents who are sent to spy on Kampala. Uganda also accuses Kigali of slowly chasing out Ugandans who usually work in Rwanda. Ugandan Member of Parliament Pius Wakabi urges the leaders of both countries to sort out their differences.
Losing jobs in Rwanda, slowly they say, your contract is over, just abruptly like that. I think there is a need for Parliament of Uganda to look into this matter.
Currently, transportation across the two countries' borders has been slowed down. The Rwandan government denied reports that it has closed its borders with Uganda, but travelers say they have had difficulties at the Gatuna border crossing as a result of ongoing work there. But Ugandan government spokesperson Ofwono Opondo has denied the border crossing has been closed.
They are not permitting vehicles and people to move into Rwanda or from Rwanda to Uganda. These children who study in Uganda, they travel every day to come and study in the Ugandan schools and go back in the evening. Even those ones were prevented. They prevented their own people.
While the diplomatic brinkmanship continues between the two governments, citizens of both countries say they are feeling the economic consequences, especially Rwanda, a landlocked country. We are praying that leaders may sort out this problem. We normally export products in Uganda, and some Ugandans could come to trade with us too. But look, the business seems to be shaken now. As citizens urge their leaders to ease tensions, there is an ongoing war of words on Twitter between foreign affairs authorities and other social media users in both countries over a hashtag Uganda-Rwanda crisis. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
A member of the five-party opposition Lamuka Coalition in the Democratic Republic of Congo says the group has been taking stock since the election and plans to meet sometime this week in Europe to chart a way forward. Lamuka's presidential candidate Martin Fayulu claimed he won the December 23, 2018 election. Freddy Matungulu is the leader of the opposition Congo Nambiso Party and a member of Lamuka. He says Mr. Fayulu has been traveling the country since the election to thank voters.
He started out with visits to Butembo, Beni, Goma, east of the country, and then he came to Bandundu before essentially winding down with visits in Congo Central in the western part of the country. For now, we are taking stock of the situation, looking at the way things went, with a view to determining what will be the way forward for us.
The elections were decided and the commission said Mr. Felix Tshisekedi won. When you say the way forward, what does that mean?
Well, that's something that is going to be up to our coalition, the Muka coalition, to decide. And in fact, we're planning on having a meeting, which I think will be taking place in a few days in Europe, the opportunity for the five leaders of Lamuka to essentially conduct this stock-taking exercise and decide what official position we'll be taking with regard to everything that has happened since the election.
Over the weekend, Mr. Felix Tshisekedi said he was going to announce an amnesty, and also he would like for exiled political people to return home. These are some of the things that Mr. Fayulu, you yourself, were fighting for under the Kabila government. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, that should be the way forward for all of us. This is a country that is supposed to be a democratic point, which should be allowing everybody to go in and out of the country without any restriction. And if it happens, for the good of everybody.
But as for now, Mr. Fayulu believed that, or your team believe that Mr. Fayulu won the election.
We don't believe the facts are there. And as I said, this is what But it's all up to the election. And for the time being, as I said, we won the election. Unfortunately, the victory was stolen from us. And we will be meeting shortly in the next several days to look into the situation and decide what we'll do.
Mr. Matungulu, it's so nice to talk with you.
It was my pleasure. It was good reconnecting with you.
Freddie Matungulu is the leader of the opposition Congo Nambiso Party and a member of the Lamuka Coalition. He was speaking with me from the DRC capital, Kinshasa. East African community countries say they are working towards collaboration in environmental conservation and the promotion of maritime safety on Lake Victoria. Officials from member countries Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Rwanda, Burundi, and the latest applicants, South Sudan, say collaboration is key to their conservation efforts. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
Representatives of the East African Steering Committee said after a meeting over the weekend in Kenya that the committee is finalizing a proposal towards successful environment conservation and marine safety. Alfred Okide, Permanent Secretary for Environment Ministry in Uganda, said member states will benefit from the project once it becomes operational. He says funds have been put aside for marine safety and climate change.
We did consider a number of projects proposals that are under review, but we also took note of the projects that have ended and the lessons that we have learned. The Lake Victoria Basin is a mother to all of us in the basin, and therefore we place a lot of importance in it.
On the other hand, Ali Matano, the executive secretary of the East African Community Lake Victoria Basin Commission, said the region is also in the process of acquiring navigation equipment that will enable easy movement in Lake Victoria, as well as ensuring mortality on the waters.
That in the year 2007, the then three EAC partner states actually passed a law, an act called the Lake Victoria Transport Act. And then later in 2010, they actually came up with the regulations which were adopted by our Council of Ministers. Now, this act provides a framework on maritime transport, including even standards. But unfortunately, the enforcement of that has been a bit weak. And therefore, it's one of the things that as a commission, we are trying to sensitize the relevant authorities to have this act implemented. By the time we finish this project in 2021, we should be able to reduce the current deaths of people who are dying in the lake.
Hundreds of East African member states' citizens die yearly in Lake Victoria for lack of proper navigation. Kenya's Forestry and Environment Permanent Secretary Khalif Ali Noor said that the water hyacinth has been a hindrance to transport and fishing in Lake Victoria, and that the Kenyan government is working towards curbing the situation.
As a host country, we know that the problem of water hyacinth is a problem that is of a lot of interest for the people here. Obviously, because we know what the water hyacinth menace has been able to affect at the lake in terms of transport, logistics, and even fishing.
Kenya has been in wrangles for a long time with neighboring countries who, along with Kenya, have all claimed ownership of the waters of Lake Victoria, especially when lives have been lost. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
A group of local organizations in Sierra Leone are expected to file a motion in court today, Monday, about what they call widespread abuses by Kwedu Limited, an international diamond mining company operating in the eastern part of the country. Jonathan Kaufman from Advocates for Community Alternatives talked to Ricky Stryak about the details of the lawsuit.
This is a lawsuit by an association of villagers in Kwedu in eastern Sierra Leone who are making claims against Kwedu Limited and its associated companies, which is a diamond mining company that's been mining for about a decade in their area and has caused a huge amount of destruction to their lives. And it's been linked to violence and deaths, as well as land grabbing, destruction of the environment, and just misery for people's livelihoods.
What are they asking for? Are they asking for a halt to mining activities? Are they asking for reparations?
Well, actually, maybe kind of interestingly, what we're filing on Monday, it's kind of the preliminaries to the lawsuit. This company is part of a very tangled corporate group that eventually goes back to Benny Steinmetz, the diamond billionaire. The companies that have been organized in Sierra Leone and also in the British Virgin Islands are a big tangled mess of corporate interlocked structures. And people who have tried to get this company to live up to its obligations, in the past it was actually about taxes, have run into huge problems because they found out that a company that people see on the ground is different from the company that holds all the assets, and it's different from the company that has contractual obligations to the state and the communities. So it means that you could go ahead and win a legal action and still not be able to even make anything happen.
Because you could win a legal action against perhaps the company that has, if you won like a contractual argument, basically, but it was against the wrong entity, it wouldn't be put into place?
Yeah, or even, you know, say you won an action for damages or a lawsuit for damages against the company that you see on the ground, but that company has no assets. So what are you going to do? And so the first step and the filing tomorrow is asking for is that the court should recognize that all of these companies actually act as one. About a judgment against one should be enforceable against all of them.
That was Jonathan Kaufman speaking to Ricky Stryak from Accra. It's time now for Daybreak Africa. Supposing here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with results from the past weekend matches in the CAF Confederations Cup. African giants Zamalek of Egypt clawed back into the CAF Confederations Cup title race on Sunday with a 1-0 victory at Petro Atletico of Angola. Overnight leaders Nkana trailed after only 4 minutes in Kumasi, Ghana, and crumbled 3-0 to nine-time CAF Confederations Cup finalist Asante Kotoko of Ghana. New table toppers Al Hilal of Sudan took advantage of sloppy goalkeeping by Zesco captain Jacob Banda to earn a 3-1 win in Omdurman, while Salitas of Burkina Faso failed to score for the fourth consecutive Group B match when they were held to a 0-0 draw at home by three-time Confederations Cup winners CS Sfaxien of Tunisia. Staying with football news, Ivory Coast's Nations Cup winning goalkeeper Boubacar Barry has announced his retirement from football with immediate effect. It comes exactly 4 years after the 39-year-old retired from international matches after helping the Elephants of Cote d'Ivoire win the 2015 African Cup of Nations. In athletics news, Ethiopia's Bihano Ligese won the Rainy Heat Tokyo Marathon on Sunday, denying defending champion Dickson Chumba of Kenya a third consecutive title. Bihano Ligese of Ethiopia clocked a time of 2 hours, 4 minutes and 48 seconds to finish comfortably ahead of Kenyan Bidan Karuki in 2 hours, 6 minutes, 48 seconds. Dickson Chumba, who was aiming to become the first back-to-back champion and three-time winner following his victories in 2014 and 2018, finished third. Ethiopia's Ruth Aga, who finished second in Tokyo last year, won the women's title, clocking 2 hours, 20 minutes, 40 seconds to beat compatriot Helen Tola by 21 seconds. Ethiopians have now won the women's marathon in Tokyo in 6 of the last 8 editions. In basketball news, AS Sale drew the curtains on the third window of the FIBA Africa Basketball League 2019 with a 107-93 triumph over Guinean side SLAC to improve to a 3-0 mark. Earlier in the day, Tunisian giant JS Karouyan secured their Elite Eight ticket after a vital 91-70 win over Nigerian outfit Rivers Hoopers to become the sixth team to secure a spot in the Elite Eight phase of the FIBA Africa Basketball League 2019. In cricket news, South Africa cricket captain Faf du Plessis hit an unbeaten century as South Africa cruised to an 8-wicket victory over Sri Lanka in the opening one-day international in Johannesburg on Sunday. The host won the toss at the Wanderers Stadium, asked Sri Lanka to bat and bowled them out for 231, a total South Africa overtook with more than 11 overs to spare. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, March 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a productive week.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu, host of Health Chat. Tuesday on Health Chat, we will discuss rare diseases, a group of disorders that affect about 350 million people around the world and are difficult to diagnose. Our guest is Chika Dunyo, Director of Education Programs with the U.S. National Organization for Rare Disorders. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.